So I'm going to talk quite briefly so that we can hear from Latifa and from Hisham about what's been going on from an Algerian perspective. Just to set the context and to open some questions that hopefully we'll be able to talk about more generally in general discussion and Q&A afterwards. Quickly to say a few things, first of all, about, as Michael said, the historical context. So I'm a historian. I haven't been in Algeria for quite some time. I've been doing lots and lots of media stuff since the 22nd of February, largely because there are relatively few academics and commentators in Britain who know where to find Algeria on the map, let alone know something about its history. But I haven't been in Algeria for a long time, so all I know about what's been going on is what I get from social media. I know the same as you all do, maybe a little bit less. I've been following what's happening from friends in Algeria and Algerian friends elsewhere, but I can't speak very much to the reality that puts on the ground, so I'm hoping that Hisham and Latifa will be able to speak more to those issues. What I think can usefully be said at the outset for our discussion is to give a little bit of historical context and think about situating the struggle that we're now seeing, which is kind of an attritional battle between the popular movement, the Hirak Sha'bi, the people on the streets, the massive coalition of civil society groups that are managing to hold together this enormous variegated movement as a single struggle at the moment, a single struggle united behind kind of two or three slogans and watchwords that everybody can agree on, mainly that it is civic-minded, it is medeni, medeniya, and it is peaceful, silmiya, and that it's, and it has a maximalist kind of program for the removal of the powers that be, the existing system in Algeria, system dégage, various different variations on that theme, but which of course has within it and behind it a whole enormously variegated set of potential programs for the future of Algeria, which are being sorted out in civil society meetings by lots of different groups, but not at all clear at the moment where that might go. The context to that, I think, as Michael said, is first of all the proximate cause for the beginnings of the protest in late February, which, as you all know, was the announcement by, not by Bouteflika himself, because again, as Arthur Asaraf has pointed out, Bouteflika cannot properly be said to be the subject of a verb in his current status, but the people around Bouteflika who had decided that he was going to be put forward for a fifth presidential term of office, and this was felt to be, almost more than anything else, I think, an enormous insult to the dignity of Algerians, not only to ordinary Algerians on the street, but also to lots of people, almost certainly within the power structure itself, in particular within the army. One of the things that was striking in some of the early coverage, especially in the Anglophone media of the protests, was the assertion that it's extraordinarily unusual to see protests in Algeria, that the protest movement was so enormous and so huge that it caught the national media very much off guard. And there was a trope that emerged quite quickly that in this very authoritarian context, it's very unusual to see protests. Now, most of you will know that that's not true, but it's worth thinking a little bit about the extent to which it's not true. I want to say two things about that. First of all, there's been, of course, an endemic movement of popular protest in Algeria since 2001, since the so-called Printemps Noir in Kabylia, since the massive protests in 2001 that followed protests in Kabylia in that year, which had massive peaceful marches on Algiers, if you remember, in the spring and summer of 2001, and continued for about a year. And then kind of were echoed in a whole lot of very spontaneous, very localized endemic protest movements in lots of different places around the country, in particular from around 2004-2005, Bouteflika's second term, when Bouteflika's motorcade, for example, was stoned in certain wilayas in the south, when there was widespread disaffection already at that stage about what was going on with the state of the country. All of those protests were contained, either effectively by the regime, as with the Kabyle protests in 2001, as a regionalist protest, which other Algerians didn't have anything to do with, even though many of the demands of those protests were very clearly of general national import, or they were contained by the ability of the regime post-2001, post-high oil prices, to be able to co-opt to deal with protest on a local level by basically giving out social goods to a certain degree to meet particular protests as they emerged. That endemic culture of protest, though, was really widespread, and I think Hisham might be going to say something about that later on. The proximate cause of the current protest, that is to say, the announcement of Bouteflika's fifth term run, was in a sense just a spark that was needed to bring together all of these different protests and give them a common focus. And I think that's largely the, if you want to think about the kind of historical dynamic behind what's been going on now, that's sort of the background to that. There is, though, a longer tradition that I've been especially keen to draw people's attention to, which is that, again, very much in contrast to what is often repeated in the Anglophone media about Algeria, in particular with reference to the Destiny Noir, the civil violence in the 1990s, of a population cowering, traumatised in fear of the state and unable to go out and protest in public. I think we also need to put the current protests in a much longer historical tradition, which is Algeria's long tradition of radical democratic popular protest, which goes all the way back to the 1930s, and is a tradition of often quite spontaneous, but also very highly structured, consensual public appropriation of space, something that developed very much within the political culture of the French Third Republic in the 1930s, in a very combative political environment at that time, which was capitalised upon by the nationalist movement, especially by the Algerian People's Party back in the 30s. Massive demonstrations on Bastille Day, for example, in July, in 1936, 1937, 1938. Huge demonstration in Algiers, in Algeria, all across the east of the country in 1938, to protest against the Italian invasion of Albania, right? So there's a long tradition of popular appropriation of space by popular movements in Algeria, and that radical democratic popular protest, obviously, for most people in Algeria now, I think, has the most immediate echoes to with the 1960 and 61 demonstrations during the War of Independence. The massive popular demonstrations towards the end of the war that marked the emergence of Algerian popular opinion behind the FLN, and some of the images that we saw coming out of Algiers in particular in February and March, very clearly for any historian, lots of historians, including me, were tweeting the pictures of those protests alongside pictures of the 1960 and 1961 demonstrations. That's a very clear visual kind of echo, I think, for these protests. So there is a history of radical democratic popular protest which goes back a long way, which precedes, in fact, even the revolution itself. That brings me to what I want to say about the reappropriation of the revolution. One of the most interesting things that's been happening in terms of the historical context of the current movement is not so much the memory of the recent past, but the narratives that are available for appropriation in Algeria of Algeria's longer political history. And in particular, the narratives, the symbols, the slogans, the images that have been circulating, especially on social media, but also in the demonstrations themselves, of the revolution itself. The martyrs of the revolution, portraits of the martyrs of the revolution, in particular those who were somewhat marginalised by official history after the revolution. The symbols, like flags, lots of older people carrying flags that were carried themselves in the demonstrations in the 1960s. Very clear, direct evocations on the part of Algerians in the street of the revolutionary legitimacy that they themselves are claiming for their movement. And this is particularly important, of course, because the army in Algeria, the ANP, has always considered itself, since independence, and in particular since 1965 and the coup by Boumediene, as kind of the depository, the vehicle of revolutionary legitimacy in Algeria. And to a large extent, what we've been seeing in recent weeks is an attempt by the people to reclaim its primacy as the revolutionary actor and, as the constitution says, the source of sovereign constituent power in Algeria relative to the army, and in particular relative to the army chief of staff and the general staff and the generals. There's an interesting tension there between the identification of the army itself as an institution which is respected and seen as a necessary guarantor to a certain extent of constitutional legitimacy, and the chiefs of the army, in particular those around Gaid Salah, who are identified as parts of the corrupt system and as being the people who need to go. And that's part of the attritional struggle that I think is going on at the moment. In terms of this reappropriation of the revolution, one of the things that points to is the extent to which one of the things the Hirak has been mobilising is a narrative of the revolution and the revolutionary legitimacy as demanding a certain kind of constitutional correction, a certain claim that is not simply a kind of empty, this idea that, you know, système de gage, that the system must get out, is not simply a kind of vacuous slogan. It points to something quite specific, I think, which is that the promises that the revolution always contained of an Algeria for the people, by the people, subject to civilian control and to the rule of law, which is a vision contained in the very first Algerian constitutional statement, the Summam Congress platform of 1956, has never been institutionalized by any Algerian government since independence. And that's what the movement itself is calling for. And to a large extent, again, this attritional struggle I think we're seeing now between the powers that be, the décideurs, the deciders, the people behind the scenes in Algiers, and the popular movement around the country is very much a demand for this kind of constitutional legality. Now, that brings us to something slightly more complicated, which is what's going on right now. If you look at a lot of the arguments being made in the public sphere in Algeria at the moment, there's quite a lot of focus, in particular in Ahmed Gaid Saleh's recent speeches, on attempts to find a way out of the crisis, either by a constitutional route or by what's increasingly being referred to by people in the Hirak as a political route, which is to say an extra-constitutional resort to what Raymond Goyce might call real politics. That is to say that the constitution has always been formally had the force of law in Algeria, but as Hugh Roberts and others have repeatedly pointed out, the constitution has never really been the effective law in Algeria. The real constitution has always been the power of the army, the security services, more recently the DRS, the people around Bouteflika, the presidential clan, the cliques, the business lobbies, the other informal powers behind the formal structures of the state. With the invocation of Article 102 of the Constitution by Gaid Saleh and the destitution of Bouteflika, a lot of people very justifiably were very sceptical of the army's sudden liking for constitutional principles and procedures. And one of the things that's been most insistently called for is the application of two other articles of the Constitution, Articles 7 and 8, which state that the people are the source of all sovereign power, the people are the source of national sovereignty, and the people are the source of constituent power. Now this, in a way, echoes a much older argument in Algerian oppositional politics, one that goes back to the FFS in 1963, the demand for a constituent assembly to resolve the difficulties that had arisen right at the very beginning of the creation of the independent Algerian Republic, to solve the problems of constitution of a democratic, rule-bound, law-bound, civilian-governed state in Algeria by recourse to a constituent assembly and a second republic, something that the FFS, the oldest political party in Algeria, has been calling for ever since the mid-1960s, and of course has never had. And I don't want to be seen as an apologist for the FFS, that is not why I'm here. But that is an older argument. It's also, right now, I think, an argument that is very pertinent, to the extent that the struggle for the reappropriation of the revolution and the way in which the Hirak is being performed, is being acted out in public space, as a reappropriation of the message of the revolution, the principles of the revolution, the founding vision of the revolution, again, which was for a democratic Algeria, which would be a state for all its citizens, irrespective of religion or race, by the people, for the people, in which the civilian power would have primacy over the military, is something that is now very much in play again, and the extent to which achieving that now is recognised as necessitating a political process that goes outside or outwith the forms provided for by the Constitution. The extent to which, for Gaid Saleh and others, remaining within the constitution as it exists is a way of containing that pressure for systemic change, and attempting to direct it and manage it in a way that will make any transition serve the interests of those in power, which of course has already happened several times in Algeria's recent history. That's, I think, where we are now. Now we are, of course, the risk, of course, there, and I have in mind very much the admonitions of an Algerian friend of mine who I spoke to recently, who was saying it's absolutely necessary to respect the law. If we go outside the law, then anything can happen. Whoever comes in next can... they will believe that they can do anything. Once you get outside the law, once you get outside of the cadre constitutionnel, once you find yourself in an extra-constitutional situation, that's extremely dangerous. That's what happened in 1992. We've been there before as well. On the other hand, it seems quite clear that the gambit of Gaid Saleh and others at the moment is to use the cadre constitutionnel, the existing constitutional structures, as a way of containing and managing a transition, trying to get the initiative back to the pouvoir from the street. What the street is trying to do is to push for a kind of real political transition which goes outside the constitutional limits. We are going to shortly be in an extra-constitutional situation because Ben Salah's interim term of presidency comes to an end formally next month. That's obviously a very dangerous moment, but I think it's a moment in which this very long incubated historical struggle will perhaps come to a head.
Thank you very much. Hisham.
I've got 10 minutes. We'll not be able to cover everything I'd like to cover, so I would urge everyone, if there's something I say or if there's any questions that arise from something I mention that I don't cover during my talk, to come back in the Q&A and please do raise them with me. What I thought I'll do is mention something about the Hirak in terms of this present moment, in terms of its, what I believe is, you know, the context in which this moment has emerged. The coverage of the Algeria protest, especially in the Western media, has always had this air of either mentioning that it was some sort of a very delayed wave of iteration of the Arab Spring, or mentioning that it was some sort of just weird moment that happened completely unexpectedly in a country where there's, as James said, you know, protest is just a very completely unusual phenomenon, both of which I think is demonstrably false and by quite some margin. I will try and walk through my slides. So the Hirak is, why now? Why are we having this movement? Why is it happening in 2019 and not, you know, in 2018 or 17 or 16? Why is it not happening next year? So the first thesis that I'd like to propose is that it did not emerge out of vacuum. This movement is the result of a dynamic of a set of forces and events that have happened, that have been happening for 3 decades. I say 3 decades because I think what we cannot understand 2019, we cannot understand what's happening right now in Algeria without understanding the first opening, democratic opening of Algeria in 1988 to 1992. I think understanding not 2019 has to begin by understanding 1988, 1992. What happened in 1988? What we've had was Algeria was ruled for the first 3 decades post-independence. I mean, you know, it's a popular democratic republic officially, but it was neither democratic nor popular for the first 3 decades of its life. And yet, it was somehow relatively stable as a country. There was very little in terms of strife. There was a lot of dissidence. There was a lot of unhappiness with the system in general. Like, you know, if you spoke to people and if you were in any way involved in politics. But overall, there was a level of stability that owed a great deal to the revolutionary legitimacy of the government, of the system. Almost everybody who was in power in Algeria for the first 3 decades had some role to play in the revolution, and that gave those in power, gave them a huge amount of margin for maneuver for a number of decades. In 1988, things came it was a pivotal moment because a new generation had emerged, which was completely unhappy with what was then extremely difficult economic circumstances, you know, in the aftermath of the oil collapse of oil prices in 1986. This is, the economics of this are a big topic on itself, and I'm happy to come back to that and to discuss the impact of economics on various phases of Algerian history. But what happened was suddenly we moved from a one-party system where we had essentially, you know, 2 official newspapers, 1 state TV channel, to a system where we had 50 parties almost created in the space of a few weeks, where we had political debates arguing about the system, about the nature of the regime, the nature of Algeria, what is Algeria, what are Algerians, on national television. And this, I cannot emphasize this enough, the stark departure from going from a one-party system to one in which we had seemingly made the transition to a fully democratic system in the space of, as I said, a few weeks or months, was dramatic. This came to a halt very quickly because essentially we had 2 waves of elections. We had elections in 1990, which were municipal elections, which the FIS, the Islamist party, the main Islamist party, won, but in a landslide. And then we had another set of elections in 1991, at the end of 1991, which were the parliamentary elections, which the FIS also won in the first round. And it was set for, Algeria was set for an Islamist parliament, probably an Islamist president very soon. And then Algeria was at a crossroad. So what happened was there was a decision that was made by a lot of people at the time to whether to go in 2 directions, whether to continue with the democratic process, have the elections, have the Islamists come to power with whatever that entailed, or to do something else. And what the decision that was made by the army, by many in the opposition parties, the democratic and secular fronts especially, was to cancel the elections, to cancel the second round, and to bring in a state of emergency and essentially divert that democratic opening from its course. At the time, most Algerians I knew, myself included, supported that move. We thought that was the worst of 2 evils. We thought this was a choice between what was bad and what was worse. And the idea was essentially, one of the most famous sort of slogans at the time was by this political leader called Emirat. He said, if I had to choose between Algeria and democracy, I'll choose Algeria. And I'd like you to reflect on what sort of the emotional and the political sort of connotations and baggage that comes with that sort of statement. Algeria, democracy. Eventually, we had essentially a decade of civil war as a result of that decision. The argument continues and will continue for decades and possibly centuries about whether this was the right call. I'm not going to get into that now, but for me, the lessons of 1988, 1992 are extremely, extremely important for today. The Hirak of 2019 has to really think very carefully about what happened back then, because a lot of the questions that had been laying dormant for 3 decades since 1988, 1992 are now re-emerging. and I'll mention a couple of them in a second. What we had was a decade of civil war, so between 1992 and 1999, less. Then Bouteflika comes to power in 1999, and essentially a decade, as James mentioned, where we had the first term, second term, there was dissidence, there was attempts to try and regain the initiative in terms of the political opposition, but there was very little in terms of actual movement on the system. The system was back in place after the 90s sort of precarious situation had gone through. It looked like Algeria was just going to remain in that status quo for forever. There were very little signs that the system was going to be movable. However, what I think is really important is the last decade. So 2010-2019, what we've seen is a new generation has come forth, and it's easy to say, you know, social media or technology is the key factor here. But I think for me, it's the fact that we had a new generation that was essentially not raised in the shadow of either the revolution or the civil war. People who essentially knew nothing about the fact that there was this guy called Bouteflika who's always been in power. A generation that's very interconnected with the world beyond the borders of Algeria, who understood that whatever was happening, the system was not the way things should be. The way the system dealt with this, how they dealt with this new generation of Algerians, I think is a big reason for what we have today. The way they handled it was essentially with 1980s, 1970s tactics, the repression or the way to deal with dissent, the way to deal with attempts to build a civic movement have been crucial in how we ended up with what we have today. I've mentioned already, I mean, just one last thing to say about the 1998-1992 movement. I said it's a decision that will be contested for a long time, whether the decision to cancel the elections and the democratic process was the right thing to do. I personally now think it was more a failure of nerves. I think it was or maybe possibly imagination, in the sense that I think people really got to... They succumbed to their worst fears about what would happen if the Islamists came to power and did not really allow for that possibility to be considered in a serious way. The second point is, I think the huge cost of that decision was the disappearance of politics. What I mean by this is, for the last few decades, Algeria has not had a political system. It's had a political facade, but it has not had a political system in any shape or form. What it had is a system for managing political space. Algeria today has 50 parties, it has, you know, dozens of political institutions. On the surface, everything seems to be functioning. There's a parliament, there's a higher house, an upper house, there's a lower house, there's all sorts of things happen all the time. You know, there's a calendar of events of political parties holding meetings and so on. Almost all of it is fiction. It has no relationship to the reality on the ground. These parties have been completely emptied of their meaning by two separate things. The first one was the regime not wanting to cede political power for the last few decades. You know, they have made sure that these parties have always been essentially under control and always controlling the ability of political parties to do anything tangible against the status quo. But the second thing also is the fact that a lot of parties lost a huge amount of popular support because of the decision that happened at the beginning of the 90s. Political parties lost a huge number of supporters because of what seemed to be a betrayal of democracy. This is not applicable to everyone, but I, from personal experience, I've lost count of the people I've met and spoken to over the period of the 90s and 2000s who said, I'm done with politics. Political parties are completely... For me, they are the enemy. They betrayed us. And this is something that is not applicable to just Islamists, but a lot of people who consider themselves Democrats and who believe that was a hugely costly mistake. So what we've had is, in the last two decades, since Bouteflika came to power, resistance started after the Civil War era is very, very specific and very idiosyncratic. It's really difficult to say too much about it that fits in the general pattern, because it was a very extreme period in all senses. From 1999 onwards, when we had a semblance of political stability coming back to, and security stability coming to the fore, the return of the public, the return of people trying to say, look, this is a country of citizens. We have to reclaim our space. So there's been a lot of protests and a lot of dissidents over the last two decades. And this is something that has to be absolutely taken into consideration. It's been on different axes, and sometimes there was a lot of overlap, but generally speaking, there was a lot of dissidents on economic justice inequality. You could not go a day in Algeria in the early 2000s, for example, where there wasn't a strike or a sit-in or an attempt, you know, a road being blocked by workers in a particular company or other who were, you know, protesting against their working conditions and so on. There was the identity sort of fault line. So obviously, as James mentioned, there was the Printemps Berbère, you know, in 2001 and since. And this has been a huge, huge dimension of the protest movement in Algeria. And there's been a more general civic engagement, you know, the idea that we should move from being dependent on the state, from the welfare state, on the economic model, which had a ruling elite that essentially bought social peace with the revenues of oil, moving from that model to the model of citizens, which means accountability as well as rights. As I said, the way the government handled the rise in the popular expressions of dissent over the last two decades has been extremely crucial to what's happening today. What we've had is a government responding to the civic engagement or civic dissidence by criminalizing dissent, an assault on press freedoms, an emphasis on this security versus liberty sort of narrative. So, you know, it's the common theme of the government sort of discourse is to say, if you challenge the current status quo, the alternative is chaos. The alternative is terrorism. The alternative is Sudan or Syria or Egypt, depending on what year we're talking. There was an assault on citizen engagement, challenging any citizen who'd like to express themselves as citizens by saying, essentially, this is, you're being a foreign hand, you're being an agent of some, you know, international conspiracy against Algeria. And then, of course, the surveillance and control of public and private space. And this is extremely crucial in terms of 2019, and I think Latifa might come onto this. But many people seem to forget, but officially today in Algeria, it's not allowed, it's illegal to protest in Algiers. It's against the rules. And we've had millions every Friday coming onto the streets. But since 2001, it's illegal to have a demonstration in Algiers. And this was just one of the major ways in which the system has been able to try and contain expressions of civic resistance. This is from last year. This is the general typical situation that you'd have if anybody tries to organize anything. So this was a junior doctor's strike, was one of the major protest movements of last year, was this national strike by junior doctors, who basically said, they've been against their working conditions. It's a very, very sort of long list of grievances. But the point is, they try to find ways of organizing and, you know, through text messaging, through social media, agree to meet in this area of Algiers. And of course, you know, the morning police forces are out there in force, ready for them, ready to disperse them. And then obviously what happens is when they show up, you know, people get beaten up. I mentioned this particular one. I mean, I could mention literally hundreds. I mean, the number of protests, if we took an average of the last two decades, the average number of protests per year is about 500 to 600. This is across the territory. It's a huge number of protests is the norm rather than the exception for the last two decades. But obviously it doesn't get the same traction because a lot of it was disparate, a lot of it was very cause-specific. So what happened was we've had two decades of protests, of dissidents, various forms, various causes, various dimensions of operation. So some of it was online, some of it was in the streets. But we didn't have one that was a national movement, that was north and south, east and west. We didn't have one that was intergenerational, but we were moving towards that. What we saw was some sort of convergence in the various discourses that were anti-status quo. So we had what you'd see on Facebook, for example, is you'd see the discourse that, let's say, people were supporting the junior doctor strikes, making the link between that and the, let's say, the repression of people in the south who were protesting against shale gas, for example. Yeah, press freedoms, I mean, that's been a major element of the way the government has been trying to contain the wave of dissidents and protests of the last two decades. We've had, it's nothing new, I'm sure this is something that many people would be familiar with, but I think I could say more about the media, because I think the role of the media in terms of, I think, you know, there are failures of the media as well as. The one thing I'd say when it comes to the press is, without the press, without the media, we would not have 2019. But without certain failures of the press, we might have had it earlier. And I'm happy to elaborate if people want to know what I mean by this. So how did the Algerian people try and go around the fact that they've had the system that was trying to occupy space, trying to prevent them from acting, trying to close down press freedoms and so on? I think the major change that we've seen in the last two decades is along various sort of dimensions, but, you know, these what I call modalities of resistance. We've had a shift from networks to from hierarchies to networks. What we've had before was, if you wanted to do a protest in the early 90s or even in the early aughts, what you do is you'd go to, like, you know, you have a group, you have a local association or you have a local organization, and then you'd launch a call, and then there'll be you turn up and usually there'll be police or there'll be an attempt to stop you in your tracks. But it was very top down. It was very people decide and then they issue a call and then something happens. And usually the people who make the call will be people who are in traditional structures, whether it's associative, whether it's party political. And this has basically been shifted completely to networks. In other words, people coming together around issues, around similar ideas about how to change things. And we've seen this, and I think Latifa would mention this in her presentation. Bypassing the form of political structures and processes, as I said, the political system in Algeria has been completely morbid and has been completely emptied of its meaning, and that forced essentially people to try and seek alternative political spaces. If you want to do politics in Algeria in 2017 or 2014 or 2012, you just go online. You just go online and have your political education conversation there. You don't go to what you used to do in this, say, the 80s, where you'd go to Kazma or whatever the local party office or whatever the party. But the revolution is the protests were leaderless. It's very difficult to find a movement or a protest movement in the last decade where you could pinpoint particular people. There are people, there are leaders, but it's very difficult to find one where it's essentially the leader and everything comes from them. This might not seem like a big thing, but it's actually a quite a marked contrast for how things usually happened in Algeria. If you look at the first opening of 1992, almost every party that emerged, so we had like 50 parties in a few weeks, almost every one of them was clearly identified with a particular personality. So you had the FFS's Hussein Aitmad, you had the party's workers, that's Louisa Hannoun. So it's the party of that person. What we've had in the last decade is a lot of the movements, you could mention some names, but nobody would dare say this movement is this person's group. And I think this has been really, really crucial in the success of the current protests. The role of technology, I think, I don't need to say much on this. I think it's sort of self-evident, but I'm happy to elaborate on this. And then obviously, I think a lot of it is to do with tactical adaptability. What we've seen is the new generation is so far more adaptable, so far more tactically savvy than the government, than the regime, than the system. And I think this has been one of the key reasons for the success so far of the 2019 Hirak. What we have is a lot of people understood that what you did was you avoid confrontation when you need to, and then when you have to confront, you confront in the numbers that you need. And I think this is not accidental. People knew what they were doing. And the young generation has really taken the old by complete surprise in terms of how tactically savvy they were about how to approach dissent. So I'll mention just some examples of the protests that we had before. So this is anti-fracking show, guys. This is actually in London, but I think I chose it because I think it's good to mention that this is not just an inside Algeria sort of movement. There's previous movements that have happened over the past two decades include like the Barakat movement, which is like a citizen engagement movement. 2014-15, so 5 years ago, they were against the fourth term campaign. I mentioned this just by way of saying this is not... this. 2019 happened before. It wasn't successful before, but you wouldn't have had 2019's success without these previous attempts. So there was, for example, an attempt to stop the previous run by Bouteflika. It failed, but it was crucial to the success of the current movement. So this is from that protest from the 2014, where we had been very open repression, which it still hasn't disappeared completely, but we've had so far less in this. There's also civic engagement sort of initiatives. Nebni is one of them. There's many others. For me, what is interesting about them is the centrality of citizenship. So movement from this idea of revolutionary legitimacy or the revolutionary family, and we're all brothers and sisters following in the path of our revolutionary leaders, to this idea of being citizens. This cartoon is from last year, and I wanted to use it to close up because I think, it still applies now. We're still in a position of precarious equilibrium, but this was how people felt last year. So the notion that 2019 came out of the vacuum, or that we had a position, that we had a completely, a vacuum of political activity, and then suddenly people went into the streets is evidently nonsense. What we have is a situation that has come to a head because of a process that was 30 years in the making.
Latifa.
Hello everyone, and thank you for being here today. Thank you for inviting me. I'm going to follow up on, I'm not a historian, by the way. I work with people. Every time I go out in Algeria or even in London, I got my reports for me, and I prefer to listen to people from the ground. Although I agree with all what Hisham just said about all the what happened in 2014 and the gay share protests and all this. I do believe that maybe 4, 6, 7 months before the 22nd, there were some factors, some events that happened, triggered the 22nd. So the first one I would say, I think for the last 10 months, young people from the stadium started to express, started to sing their pain, their oppression, but also on the songs you can hear and you can understand the resilience of these young people. The second one was the cocaine scandal, where a military figure is connected to large-scale import of drugs. The third one I would say is 4 weeks before the 22nd, 12, do you know what haraga means? The young people who take a woody boat and try to reach Europe. 12 disappeared in the sea, and they were all from an area in Algiers called La Pointe, and an area that is like known for being contested people. And then a phenomenon came about 8 months ago. A young boy called Amir Dezed left Algeria, claimed asylum in France, and was releasing videos, on YouTube videos, talking about having information from where we don't know, about all these corrupted generals, all these corrupted people. And he was following him on YouTube. You see, when he released a video, maybe 15 minutes later, you have following 10 minutes, he will be followed or liked by around at least 1,000 people. Not only him, I think some very influential YouTubers from the FIS sympathizers, I will say some of them are based in London, one in London, one in Birmingham, but the majority will be based in London, in the UK and Switzerland, releasing videos nearly every day. There's someone called Zitot, nearly every day, and from the 22nd he was releasing at least 2 videos a day, talking about supporting and talking about things that are against the regime. The other one, I'm not going to speak too much about this, everyone knows Bouteflika was too ill to end the countries, but there are more and more rumors around those weeks before the 22nd, especially from the day he traveled to Switzerland, that he was dead. So there was too many videos saying no, so it was not acceptable. People started really thinking about their dignities and how can we accept to be run by someone who's dead. Said to his brother to replace his brother was completely, Benadiaz was completely rejected by Algerians. Algeria is a republic, it's not a monarchy, of course. And then one of the main, I think, on the 16th of, so the week before, the Friday before, the electoral campaign started. Someone called Nekez was draining a lot of people around him. Everywhere he goes to give a speech for his electoral campaign, a lot of young people was around him. The one that were supposed to be big was in Kharata, a city called Kharata. And when he went to give his electoral campaign a speech, he was banned from. So people in Kharata did not like this and started to send messages on Facebook and YouTube that the 16th of February will be a big march in Kharata. And this is what actually I think, because when he was making his campaign, he was talking about, he talked a lot. He goes, the guy got money, and everyone was saying that he was capable to be in Oran today and then in Algiers the following day and then in Tindouf 3 days later. He was really dynamic and talking to people and getting the young people around him listening to him. At the end, it didn't work for some reason, so something happened. I'm not going to speak about that. But Kharata was a city where actually it started. And then, of course, Facebook. Facebook did all of, I think, managed to get all this contestation together and help people to start, because there were, after the 16th, I don't have a number of how many people attended the protest in Kharata, the 16th of February, but it has encouraged people in Algiers, as Hisham was saying, since 2001, protesting Algiers is banned, it's really repressed. So it helps people, to young people, to break the wall of fear. So, okay, they have done it in Kharata, they're not going to take this traditional, maybe, contest of the traditional, that Algiers is actually the city where everything started. So they had this, like, they said, okay, is it going to happen to Kharata? No, it's going to happen in Algiers next Friday. Some of these points here, maybe I would not have time to look at it, but I've decided to offer something to the audience. Whoever is working on Algeria, I thought I will spend some, maybe 2 or 3 days translating some of those football anthems. And because I thought there is a strong message on those lyrics. Before I start talking about this, I will share with you some of the translation of those songs. I think young people, and mainly male, are the main initiators of the Hirak. Not political parties, not those who were used to be banned in 2014, not Barakat, not Muwatana, nothing like that. Young people, young male, because I think for the last maybe 20 years we empowered women. Women are doing much better in universities, in work, and we kind of neglected this young male who are like expressing in all these songs a strong frustration, and so there was like several warnings through this all their football anthems. Actually, some of their songs have now become the Casa del Moradia. I'm sure you all know it. It's like the hymns of the Hirak now. And young women then experiencing same injustice, lack of freedom, of course. Join them later. I will explain what day exactly women started to march, join the protest in a huge number. At the moment, of course, they are all united. They have the same goal. Maybe some will not agree with this, but within the regime and other opponents, they are claiming to have been behind of the 22nd. I do not believe this. I spoke to so many young people in Algiers, Oran, in London, and on Facebook with those who are in Paris and everywhere else. This is definitely not the movement belong to the young people, not to any political parties. And it's maybe I will say some of the YouTubers are saying, yeah, we are behind, yeah, but I think at the moment it's really going out of the hand of everyone, of those claiming. So the first song I would like to share with you, we can't listen to it, but I can tell you what it says. So I can't bear this pain, time is becoming long for me. I fail in all my endeavors, despite goodwill and good thinking. This life is becoming an impasse. I say I want again, but I do it again, which is a drug. A mix of phrases. I will explain what they mean by this, because I interviewed, I had the opportunity to know one of the, and to meet one of the one who's part of the Red Becha, right in the lyrics. They clearly wanted it. They built prison. The women are working and Shabiba, the young male, are sleeping. Let me go. My heart is bleeding in a wooden boat. He who survives and passes over the sea. His life is long and his destiny was well written. The dearest, the one who stay and are still close to me, this is what they mean, are still here, but very few carry on. Very few are managing to survive. So what he told me here, auntie, here in this lyric, we talk about people who come from other wilayas. The wilayas are outside Algiers and not about other races. We talk about the deputies, the businessmen, the people of the new oligarchy that live in Club des Pins. So Club des Pins is like this, a place where people are not necessarily from Algiers, but because they are a member of the parliament and they will all live there. It's very well privileged until the last maybe 4 weeks, I think. The director is in prison now. And they benefit from Algiers, and people who know Algiers. And actually, this is Ouled El Behja, the supporter and fan of Ouled El Behja are from Bebelouet and Soustara, so I'm sure you know about it. So I will say it's a fief of Islamists. Of the Islamists. So you can see that patriarchy, the jealousy that the women are not looking at Wadi El Houma anymore. So they are out of it. And there are other males who are rich, who are deputy, who are making profit of this. If they don't want to listen to us, we will be there and nothing will stop us. They have to listen. This is our country. It's a big and rich enough. We can all live here. When I say it, this was from 17 years old. I know there are good people over there. He showed me the to El Moradia, which is where the presidency is, Omdi Douche Mourad. Whoever has no straw in his belly will never fear us. They know when they say Netnahauga, which means, I think you know, you're familiar with this slogan now, is they all have to go. They know that not all have to go. They know that there are people there who are good. who are not corrupted. And what they say is whoever is correct, we will still be working it, or we'll be still accepting. This is like, this is a long song, but I just took the one that the small lyrics that I thought were important. This attracted my attention. Actually, last year I've heard this song and I was like, oh, there's a pain there, it's like it's too strong. So he said, this night is so long, I'm thinking whether I will be alive tomorrow. They name chipa, bribe, part of the sweetener, حق القهوة. They say being a rujla in Algeria is very important, like the real man, the one who's correct, the one who's not corrupted, the one who's the macho, like I would say, and it's not important anymore. You have to play the game. You have to be to accept chipa, you have to accept bribe. And the thing is, when we talk about this big scandal of the cocaine, 700 cocaine, these young people singing the young people I spoke to, they know there are big corruption scandal and big corruption is there, but they even don't have access to that. They don't even have access. There was a young boy last year I've met in Oran. He told me, oh, I just, please help me to get in the UK. I don't want to stay here. And I said, why don't you want to stay here? You have a job, you have a son, you have this. He said, you know, in Oran, in the Sheraton, you can go there and see the son of El Hamel, who was later on actually arrested. Son, he's using the helicopter of the gendarmerie of the state to bring his friend from Algiers to have a night out in the Sheraton in Oran. So when I see this, he said, how can I live here? How can I carry on? It's not our country, it's their country. And then he said they gave them all rights, so those who are not real men anymore, those who accept the bribe and... And in this country, you will learn to empty the case, the treasury. This is what you learn. And we have been patient with them, God knows. But he doesn't want to leave the chair. The stadium vibrates, and only the wise will understand the message. That our lyrics are a remedy. I think this is an important part of what we can see now. A generation which has witnessed blood can't be lured with sweet. I agree when you said maybe they haven't not know this. But the one I spoke to, they were born when Bouteflika was, but they were born from parents who just came out from the blood. So they know, I mean, my kids, they know everything about. They were born in 95, 97. Yeah, they know. They haven't seen it, maybe. Mine, but most of our kids, we are the 50, the middle-aged Algerian, all our kids have witnessed something. So they don't, you can't just tell them, oh, okay, stop now. They're out and they're not going back again until they got to what they want. This is, I'm very sure about this. Nothing will stop this Herak because they have nothing to lose anymore. And they know. And they said, as much as the system is unjust, we will follow it step by step. And these people are not aware of what is happening in the South. So the song is talking about some people who are not really aware that actually the leaders and the state are stealing. But for me, that's the song saying, I don't care, take it all, just leave me the Hamra. The Hamra is the club. And the club, why they're saying this, I'm going to explain. If you all know Ali Haddad, so Ali Haddad is one of the oligarchy, recently bought shares of this club, of El Hamra. And they said, so he explained, another fan explained to me, refers to our rejection of the buying up of our football club by Ali Haddad. I think Ali Haddad is now in prison. Yeah, Gates Salah rid of him.
He's up in
court. Oh, he's been, moment, yeah. So and there's another song called Liberty. I think you all maybe have heard it. I don't have time to look at that. But I translated all of them. If anyone is interested, please ask me. So they denounced those responsible of this construction of new motorways. Ali Haddad took all the market and major corruption. Haddad is the one who actually took all this money. The song that became very famous, so they said the first term we let it go, they tricked us with the black decade. The second term the story got old. It was about dwelling in El Moradia, and it was the second term in 2008 when they changed the constitution and made the so they said, okay, we understand now, he want to stay. The third one, the country starved for their personal benefit. And the fourth one, the puppet has died. What is important about this is, you don't know Algeria, I would say young student, young activist, the middle class, if we can call it like this, don't really listen or don't really sing what it says in the stadium. It's in the people's mind that all people who go to the fans, football fans, are actually the voyous. But this song in particular has been sung by every section of the society, even those who sing El Andalus, like the very middle class people. They were singing this song again, and the carré of the feminist, the women. The song is now the hymn, I think it will be. If there is one, it will be this one.
President.
La Casa del Moradia. Yeah, del Moradia is 10 Dowling Street, right,
yes.
Maybe?
So the residence of the president.
Yes, yeah. So this is what they call the Moradia. So the first call for Hirak were on Facebook, YouTube, very few on Twitter, but also in mosques. And the call for the 22nd was calling people to go and march after the Jumu'ah, after the Friday midday prayer. So in fact, the 22nd, 27th February, very few came out in the morning before the pray. And also there was like very few women. And one woman told me we were not sure where the call was coming from. We didn't want to experience another 5th of October. Then we joined on the following Friday to protect our children. The army will not shoot women and children because women would be like... So it really what she was telling me is a group of women, but she was talking. And she said, we decided to go out to protect our kids because we know they won't shoot us again. The Friday, the 8th of March, then Reuters reported 20 million people marched across the country. It was the 3rd February. People were started to be more and more encouraged to go out. And also it was the International Women's Day. I don't know if you heard about Fodil Boumala. He's a journalist and activist, and he speaks about... It's 185 million protesters, so like an average of 13 million marching every day across the country. Not every Friday, but I think Friday. He was talking about Fridays. I don't think he's including Tuesdays, which is the day for students, and Sunday is the day of solicitors and the magistrats. Paris reached 1 million on the 8th of March. I've been marching 6 times in London, one Saturday where we reached 1,000 protesters, and I think it was the 4th one. So this was the message. I've heard Michael Lewis saying last time, Algeria has the best caricaturist in the world. I agree. There are thousands of caricatures. I like this one. I'm sure you have seen more and more, but this is like the symbolic one, that the woman giving the rose to the police or the army or whoever to say to maintain the peaceful side of this hera. The other one that is very important is Jishab Hawa Hawa. So the army and the people are united, try to be united. I like this. So Shab is the people, Jishab on the top is the army. And here is the Isaba, what they call the Isaba, which is the Bouteflika.
The gang.
Yeah. So when you march in Algiers, is this knee. And I've been marching when I was about 17 in the 80s on Fac Centrale. That was the Printemps Berbère. I marched when I was about 20 against Le Code de la Famille in 84 in Algiers, same place, I would say, yeah? And I marched in 1991 against Aid Ahmed called us to march after the elections. This is something I've never seen in Algiers in my life. You have all kinds, and this was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Do you want to translate it for people who don't speak French?
Okay, so you have deceived my father, you've deceived me, but you would not do this to my kids. Vous n'allez pas tromper mes enfants, nos enfants. Anyone who has something in his heart or will have a banner and walk in Algiers. That's what's happening in Algiers. Maybe what you see in Facebook and on TV or what is reported are what the guy reporting want to show. But when you walk through Algiers, actually you will see different group of people, different group of interest, and having a banner talking about. This one was the disabled one. So a disabled person in Algeria receive a disability allowance of 4,000 dinars, which is £17 a month, 1/7. So this is a scandal. So you will see lots of people working with it. There are other, anyone else. All I'm saying is, what was extraordinary is all these people marching together and having deputy. Oh yeah, the deputy earning.
The MPs are...
How much? The MPs are...
40, yeah.
Yeah, 10,000 more, yeah, a month. And the disabled will have the 4,000 dinars. There are other... I can't put everything here, but if I have thousands of pictures from Algiers stocked, art has been very a good tool in sustaining and sending messages. about the Hirak. A lot of people are actually turning on the walls in Algeria, in Algiers in particular, and other cities, I think. Haven't seen any in Oran, but... And you have the left wing, yeah? This is Ullman, can we see him? Do you know Jamal Ullman? He's like an old Paxist activist. And so this is very like left wing, talking about the workers, faire venir défendre nous. It's like very left wing slogans. Very few are, sadly, I will say. Foreign interference, definitely they don't want any. And then this is the last one, where young people were saying, you are confronted to a generation who knows you well, but you don't know anything about. So what next? Maybe we'll leave this to the discussion. Say people are looking for Nukba. You hear Gayt Salah saying, where is the Nukba? You hear elite. A lot of people that the Nukba is this elite. We want someone to represent this hierarchy and to engage with, but no one is accepted. I think my point of view is this football antennas are not coming from nowhere. These people singing or writing this, they all have a kind of connect. They're connected to what we call a cultural elite, filmmakers, singers, academics, and other rappers. And the ideas expressed in these lyrics are a translation of their pain, but also resistance and resilience and tenacity. What will happen next depends on how far both the army, definitely the army is not going to shoot. Definitely, this is not going to happen. The Syrian or the Sudanese is not going to happen. Because when you speak to people from the army, of course, when I do my research, I speak to them. They said, my mother is marching. My sister is marching. My daughter is marching. I'm not going to do this. And same from the other side. What happened in the Black Decade between the army and the people will never happen again. They learned their lesson. I see this. Some people think that the time is playing against the Hirak. I personally think that time is playing for the Hirak. And it's going to give time to these young people to find their way and to fight, or maybe to create a mechanism and maybe to valorize this like kind of reconciliation between the army and these young people. And hopefully they will find something. They will engage in like... They don't care. What I'm saying maybe in my next one, the tool and instrument used to achieve what they want to achieve. I know a lot of you are talking about constitution, anti-constitution, the solution is politics, it's political. We need. I don't think they care when you speak to them. Do what they know how, maybe they have suggestions, but they don't, as far as they change the country, as far as justice, more freedom, as far as we can offer them a better life, the instrument, the legal instrument you use is not there. It doesn't, to me, those people who are singing those songs in the stadium, they don't care about how you're going to achieve this. They just want to achieve this and very quickly. Very. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very impatient.